buzzer been poured on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do. Florida.
Courtside with Cats and Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to our Final Four edition of Courtside with Cats and Coach G. I'm Andy Katz along with Seth Greenberg here in Glendale, Arizona as we get ready for the national semifinals on Saturday. Gonzaga, South Carolina will be the first game. North Carolina taking on Oregon in the second game. We're going to have a couple of interesting and high-profile guests on our podcast. Bob Huggins, West Virginia coach, will join us, and Michigan State head coach and Hall of Famer Tom Izzo will also join us here on the podcast. Seth, let's first get a little bit of an overview. We talked initially about these matchups on Monday. Now that we get closer to the games, let's first deal with the Gonzaga-South Carolina matchup. What is jumping out at you as you've had a chance to sort of analyze this one as to maybe the most important aspect of this game?
You know, Gonzaga has two challenges in front of them. I think number one is their matchup with Thornwell at the three. I really think Gonzaga only played 11% of possessions in zone. I actually think with Thornwell at the three, I would not be shocked to see them play 60% zone. And they do have a 2-3 kind of matchup, Judd Heathcoat, 2-3 zone in their repertoire. It'll take dribble penetration away. It'll make South Carolina more of a jump shooting team. And more importantly, it'll help them get matched up with Thornwell. Because at three, who do you put Thornwell on Thornwell? Do you put Perkins on him? Do you put Nigel Williams-Goss, who's going to drive him, who's going to be put him in position to be in foul trouble? Do you put Jonathan Williams on him? But then, again, who guards the front court of South Carolina? So I think I look for Gonzaga to play more zone. And then offensively, Gonzaga, I think it's really important for them. How are they going to get into offense? They're going to have to beat that defense down the floor, play ahead of the defense. Very important. And then in the half court, West Virginia and South Carolina have similar philosophies. They're going to deny the entry pass. They're going to deny the reversal pass. And they're for sure going to deny Nigel Williams-Goss. So that, how is Gonzaga going to get into offense? That's going to be on that side. And you flip it, South Carolina, can they stop the ball from coming into Karnowski? Because he can't just score it. He's a terrific passer. He flattens your defense, which is really important. And then it sounds silly, but Gonzaga is a very tough team. You know, how are they going to deal with Gonzaga's fluidity of their offense, their transition game, and their ability to post the basketball and play at a post play? So, and their ball screen defense. How much are they going to switch? You know, in games this season, they've been like Florida. They switched 1-4 at times. Are they going to switch 1-4? Are they going to switch 1-3? Are they going to trap them? And I think those are the questions those both coaches are looking at right now, trying to determine how they're going to play this game.
South Carolina's done a great job of coming back in games in the NCAA tournament. Gonzaga has held leads and has had to sort of hold people off, you know, in the last couple of moments, going back to their only loss by you, they weren't able to do so. How do you see that playing out if South Carolina gets down? How easy can they climb back up against Gonzaga? And then conversely, Gonzaga, how will they handle sort of a steamroll South Carolina coming back at them?
You know, it's really hard because the way South Carolina plays, you know, when they come after you, they can come after you and create layups. They can come after you and get putbacks on the offensive glass. They can come at you, and if you have any lack of confidence in that moment in time, they can overwhelm you. That's what they do. They overwhelm you with, because they're harder playing toughest team. So I think it's going to be, you know, for a Gonzaga team that's given away some leads, they are vulnerable to the South Carolina system when South Carolina is what I would say is hyperventilating and in panic mode and in desperation mode. It'll either be a layup or a turnover is my gut feeling. And then on the other hand, I think South Carolina, because of the way they play, they always know they can get back in a game. They know they can create a turnover. They can know they can get to the glass. They know they can drive it and get to the line. I would say there would be more pressure on Gonzaga in that situation because of their past and also because of the way South Carolina plays.
Who do you think between the two will be a little bit more in awe of the moment? because, you know, we've all been to these Final Four games, and it you're in a football stadium. Maybe you've never been there before, and you sort of have to just let everything settle down at some point. Which team do you think will handle that better?
You know, I think it sounds funny, but if you deal with Frank every single day, what's playing in a football stadium? That's a joke. I think that, look, the jump shooting team that shoots more threes is impacted early in the game by playing in a stadium. I do not expect – I expect South Carolina to play this game right from the beginning, driving it, attacking, getting to the glass, trying to put Gonzaga in foul trouble. Where Gonzaga, you know, they're going to probably make plays. So when they move the ball and they get this South Carolina defense stretched out, because they're overplaying so hard, Andy, you're going to see a lot of drive and kicks. And if they drive and kick, that means they're probably shooting a three. So early in the game, if Gonzaga settles for those drive and kicks, they're going to be shooting in the dome for the first time. So I'd say that's probably a little bit of an advantage to South Carolina because of style of play. I think in terms of the enormity of the event, you've got a veteran Gonzaga team. You've got a veteran South Carolina team. Are there going to be anxiety? Yes. But I think once that ball goes up, I really believe that these kids, because of they play nationally, internationally, they have a maturity, they compartmentalize what's going on that court. And they literally can block out everything else. And they're just trying to play as hard and as well as they can.
Now, can you give a pick or not yet?
Not until Saturday. I mean, that's where I get paid.
Okay.
All these great picks I make. Come on, Andy. I mean, all of America is waiting for my pick.
So we'll hold off on yours. I'll make one. I do lean toward Gonzaga in this one, in large part because of their consistency throughout the course of the season. All right, the other matchup, Oregon against North Carolina. As we are taping this, we do not know the status of Joel Berry. He has an ankle injury. I'd be shocked if he's not out there, but how effective, we just don't know that yet. So Oregon, as we talked on Monday, I mean, they just took it to Kansas. They were sort of much more aggressive. Jordan Bell had the game of his life. This is a North Carolina team that has waited for this moment to get back here. It's sort of a perfect storm for everything to work out for them. Now that you get closer to this game, what are your initial thoughts on what has to be the keys for this one?
Well, Carolina's a very different team than Kansas. Kansas doesn't throw it inside. They drive it inside. They get their pain points on drives, which is very different. And, Carolina is very good against zones, not settling to shoot be a three-point shooting team. And I think that's really kind of what this game is going to come down to. Carolina playing ahead of the defense, getting to the offensive glass, obviously, but then playing through the post when Oregon changes their defenses and having a simple plan of – all right, we're going to run our motion, but if it's zone, right, we're going to try to get the ball to the high post, to the baseline, back out. All our threes are going to be step-in threes, not first side threes. We want to get the ball in the paint and play high-low or to the rim and to the glass on a shot. So very, very different. For North Carolina, the big thing is Berry's not there. That's huge, not just for points, but one thing, Andy. Berry, he's probably their best step-in three-point shooter. So when that ball is going inside and coming back out, if it does come back out, all right, he's their best guy stepping in, knocking down a three. The other thing is with Berry is he's got tremendous leadership skills. He's the guy that gives this team a little bit of an edge, a hardness, an attitude. You take that away, combined with playing against changing defenses, his leadership will be sorely missed. So I would expect him to play, and I expect Carolina to go inside early and often, and not settle to be a jump shooting team against the zone and the changing defenses of Oregon.
How well do you think Oregon can come back if they get down?
They can come back. I think that Dane is going to soft trap to try to slow Carolina down a little bit, limit their exposure defensively. I think they will change their defenses. I think the key for Oregon is their guards have got to rebound the ball. Their guards have got to come back and rebound the ball. If they get down, they're a resilient group. They can drive it and get to the foul line and lengthen a game. And they've got a toughness about them. What they can't do is Jordan Bell cannot get in foul trouble. Right? That's the one thing that can't happen. He gets in foul trouble and this game is over.
As for North Carolina versus Oregon in this moment, the easy answer is, you know, North Carolina's been here. They lost at the buzzer last year to Villanova. But if this game gets tight, how much could that play in Oregon's favor because of this expectation for Carolina to get back to the title game?
Yeah, I think that could work in Oregon's favor. I think the expectation, the pressure, the redemption tour, you know, all those things. Look, Roy Williams and the Carolina kids have created a cause with this redemption concept, and I think it's great. You're working towards something, and that's to me as a coach, you always want to create a cause. But now that you've gotten here, now I think there is a different type of pressure because it's probably the last time a lot of these guys are going to walk through this door with this team and this opportunity. And they know how fine a line it is between winning and losing. So I think there is a pressure. And I think that the Oregon kids, on the other hand, they'll be freed up. But they'll be determined. And they've got a hardness about them. And they're not afraid of the moment. And they're also, they've got guys who can make big shots at the end of a game. And it's not just Brooks. It's Dorsey as well. So this has the makings of a very similar game to Villanova last year. Villanova three-quarter court pressured. Villanova kind of played some games with their defense. Villanova was very attacked matchups. They controlled the tempo of the game at times. This game could look a lot like Villanova last year.
All right, you can't pick. I will. I'm going with Oregon. I'm going with an all-West final, Gonzaga versus Oregon, Monday night. What do you think of that?
I think, look, you know what the great thing about a pick like that is? If you're wrong, no one cares. If you're right, they go, right. Damn, that Cats is smart.
All right, before we get to our guests, a couple other news items for you, Seth. As we're taping this, Dayton has announced its hire. They have hired Anthony Grant, a former head coach at VCU in Alabama. He will replace Archie Miller, who went off to Indiana. We had him on our podcast earlier in the week. What do you think of the hire of bringing back Anthony Grant as a head coach in college basketball? He was with Billy Donovan over in Oklahoma City this past year.
Well, you're bringing him back to his alma mater. And I think it's a great hire. I think that, you know, Dayton is a place he's comfortable with. You're not being basically suffocated by the football situation. I think he'll probably end up keeping Tommy Ostrom, one of the assistants that was there. You remember now, Anthony Grant is a what? He's part of that Bob Huggins, well, actually Frank Martin, Billy Donovan coaching tree. I mean, he played for Miami High when Frank was an assistant coach at Miami High for Shaky Rodriguez. But Anthony Grant, with this NBA experience, is huge because that's huge in recruiting. He's a very good coach. He's very determined. He obviously loves his alma mater. He'll be up to sell it as well as anyone. I think it is a home run hire.
In terms of guys leaving, we know this is going to be happening quite a bit. Melo Trimble announced that he is signing with an agent. He is ending his career at Maryland. How do you assess what he did for the Terps and Mark Turgeon?
Unbelievable. Incredible career. Great ambassador for Maryland. Made Maryland relevant again. Had a guard that could connect with Coach Turgeon. Took a chance, but came to Maryland at a time in the transition to the Big Ten. Incredible career and has to go because his stock's not going to change this year or next year. So, you know, I wish him well. Stay mellow, my friend. I'm a big fan, and I think he'll be on an NBA roster.
And at Duke, as expected, Jason Tatum and Harry Giles so far have announced that they are leaving. We saw in the McDonald's All-American game, there's a whole new crop of guys obviously coming in, led by Gary Trent Jr., to Duke next season. What's your assessment of the season that Tatum and Giles had and the effect on their departure?
Tatum's terrific. I mean, Tatum, you know, Paul Pierce, you know, comparisons. His offensive game will translate right into the NBA. He's skilled. He can shoot it with range. He can put it on the floor. He can play in isolations. He'll learn to run the court more consistently. He's got to get stronger. I mean, Harry Giles has to go because, I mean, if he has another year like he had last year, he might be undraftable. I think that he probably lost more money than any player in college basketball this year, and it's not because of anything. He didn't play in 412 days. And I think it was unfair to have some type of expectation for him. That second surgery, it looked like he dragged that leg around. I think he's a late first round, early second round pick. You know, the whole key to his draft status will be his medical situation and his physical. And you know, but when he did play, he showed signs at the end of the season of doing some good things. But he didn't show a fluidity to his game. And then you say, look, where does he play? What's his position? Can he rebound the ball as a four? He can't shoot it as a three. He's not a five. I mean, he is a pure futures market draft choice with a questionable medical record.
And as promised, now joining us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, West Virginia head coach Bob Huggins. Bob, a couple things we want to unpack with you. First of all, Frank Martin. He was telling us a story about how he was having lunch with his wife, and he gets the call, and he's going to be an assistant at Cincinnati. He's leaving a couple days later. It's a great opportunity for him. The question is, what did you see in Frank Martin that you for you to make that call to hire him that now, years later, here he is coaching in the Final Four?
Well, as I've told Frank many times, you know, Frank had those great teams, not good teams, but great teams at Miami Senior, and I tried to go down there and recruit his guys, could never get one. So I figured he could recruit him to Miami Senior. I couldn't get him to Cincinnati. He's better than me, so I hired him. I hired him to come in and help me.
And what did he do for you that now we're seeing come to fruition as a head coach?
Well, he's always been a good coach. I think when, you know, what I was really impressed with was when you go down and watch practice, he ran a great practice. He had, I don't know, seven or eight, like, high major guys on one team, and they played together. They shared the ball. They played the game the right way. And I thought, man, this guy can really coach. And so when I had an opening at Cincinnati, I hired him. I had him and Andy Kendi on the same staff. Now think about that.
Pretty good.
You've always had a great staff, and you have a great staff right now. I mean, that's, you know, you Hugs, don't you think that people have gotten away from that? Like, you've always hired coaches that also could right. recruit, not recruiters that had to learn how to coach. Has that always been your philosophy?
Yeah. I've been fortunate. You know, when I started at Walsh College, I hired Dan Peters, who everybody in the business knows what a heck of an X and O guy he was. And, you know, I'm the son of a coach, man. I've been around coaches my whole life. And you know, coaches came over, spent time with my dad. My dad was a great mentor to a whole bunch of coaches. And I like coaches. I like being around coaches. You know, the recruiting thing, we had a pretty good team this year, and we didn't beat anybody for anybody, really. You know, we just got guys that like to play.
And that's what it's all about. Now, you know, obviously your relationship with Frank, I'm sure you've talked to him since this past week. And what's the one bit of advice you gave him about preparing himself, his team, for this week? Because it's a new – Frank's a great coach, but this is a new experience. It's basically a new arena, this dealing with everything else besides basketball this week.
Well, I'm not sure I'm the one to give advice. I've been here twice and lost both times, so I'm not so sure that I'm the guy who ought to be giving advice. But, well, I told him to have somebody else do the tickets. I mean, the ticket thing is the deal that just drives you absolutely insane. The media stuff you can handle, that's not a – I mean, we do that all the time anyway. I don't think that's actually an issue that I think some people try to make it. But the ticket thing is brutal. Everybody you've ever known thinks you're supposed to give them a ticket, not just a ticket, but a really good one.
And Frank knows a lot of dudes now. I mean, it's how about in terms of, like, you know, the scheduling? Like when you went to the Final Four, you have a full week to prepare for this game. You get back on Sunday. You give them a day off. How early did you dig into your next opponent as opposed to saying, wait a second, let's work on us right now, and then Wednesday evening or Thursday, whatever, you know, your normal time for preparation, like, when would you dig into, you know, prepare for Gonzaga?
Well, let me tell you what I did at Cincinnati. I didn't want to change anything. You know, I was afraid if I started changing things, then, you know, and I always had open practice. Anybody could come to my practice at Cincinnati until, you know, our world changed. But so I said, hey, anybody wants to come to practice, come to practice. I got like 11,000 people at our last practice. And I mean, it was insane. And I'm like, what am I doing? You know, and then I didn't want to change anything. My guys, I always let my guys talk to the media, do whatever, you know, I didn't. And I had a couple guys that, I mean, they were chasing the media up and down the street. The media didn't have to come to them. They were trying to find them. They're like a dog chasing the bone. They just loved seeing their name in print. And that kind of got a little bit, I thought, out of hand. So I wanted to change it, you know, when we went a few years ago. And, but I didn't have guys like that then. You know, the guys I had at West Virginia were a whole lot different. They didn't really enjoy the limelight like some of my Cincinnati guys did. So I don't know what the answer is, Seth. I don't know. I don't think you ought to change a whole lot of things. I think the biggest thing that happened to us, looking back a few years ago, was you get out of your routine. No, you're kind of used to, you play a game, you have to take a day off, you prepare 2 days, you play the game. And now all of a sudden you got like 5 days to prepare, and it's just different. You know, it's your guys are by, you know, if you practice Monday, Tuesday, by Wednesday, your guys want to play a game. Yep. So I thought that just the whole routine thing changed.
You think Frank should try to have like one full blown 10, 15 minute scrimmage just to get up and down and get after each other, you know, in a full court way? Or whoever, well, not just Frank, I mean, any coach.
But Seth, don't you think that we all probably ought to do that more than what we do? You know, you worry about guys' legs, yep. You know, and guys mm-hmm. are beat up a little bit, and you worry about somebody turning an ankle, or, you know, yes, I think you should, but it's hard to make yourself do it.
Obviously, great finish to the Gonzaga game. For them, not
for who?
You guys,
for who? Wait a minute, great finish for them. For who? Yeah, for
it
them.
Was an entertaining finish. You know, Gonzaga has, I wouldn't say it's an equal comparison from West Virginia to South Carolina, but in terms of facing a tough team that could come at you, they've drawn a little bit of a parallel. What did you see in this Gonzaga team that might prepare them for the physicality of South Carolina after you played them?
Well, they're really physical. Don't think for a minute that Gonzaga's not physical, and they're really physical defensively. They don't let you go where you want to go without a stroke, and they've got great size. They've got great length, and they stand a guy in front of the rim, and you just don't get easy baskets. I think that's the biggest thing, and probably the best thing that Mark does with that team is, you earn every basket you get. There's just no easy ones to be had.
Do you think that, you know, as Mark approaches this game, they only play about 11% of their possessions the zone. Thornwell's such a tough matchup when he's at three. You guys are a little more undersized at that position. Do you think that you could see Gonzaga playing more zone to try to contain Thornwell when he's at the three, or you think, you know, hey, this is who we are, this is what got us here, this is how we have to play? Like, what's your gut on that?
We've played him a lot over the years, Seth, and Mark plays more zone. He plays zone at the right times, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he does a great job of knowing when to get out of the man-to-man and get into the zone for whatever reason, whether it's some guys are fatigued or you know, somebody is kind of starting to hurt them to where they think they can do a better job of coverage. And, you know, I know a few years ago we had a guy who really made shots, and they just basically, it was almost like a box and one. I mean, they had somebody on him the whole time. But doing that, you let other people shoot, and he just, you know, he figured the one guy we had that wasn't necking shots and was going to keep shooting them, and they just let him shoot it. So I think he does a great job of changing defenses, and I think he'll change defenses. I mean, Frank's going to change defenses too. You know, I think both of them are great at figuring out what to do when.
Well, Hugs, we appreciate you spending a couple of minutes with us, and once again, another great season that you had at West Virginia. I know it fell a little bit short, but thanks for all that you've done and your contributions throughout the course of the season. Thank you.
All right, guys.
All right, Seth, so we just heard from Coach Huggins, and now we are going to be joined here on the Shell Penzo Performance Line by Michigan State Hall of Famer, Tom Izzo. Tom, you know what's kind of a nice surprise is that the four teams in the Final Four are not dominated by freshmen. It's not that that would be bad if Kentucky was here and dominated by freshmen, because obviously great players, Alonzo Ball from UCLA, but so much chatter about the freshmen all year, and we've got four teams that are leaning on upperclassmen, or at least sophomores and above, in this one-and-done era. What's your reaction?
Well, you know, Seth and I, Andy, we talk about it often. You know, it's I think we've all made too much of a deal about the freshmen. You know, we had that thing with Duke and Kentucky a couple of years ago, and it seems like your network and everyone else has got to, you know, we got to follow them, and I understand that. But it is true. I mean, when we won the championship, when Maryland won the championship, I mean, most teams that have won it or get there are not just freshman dominated. And I think that's probably healthy for our sport, even though maybe people would like to see more freshmen there. I think, you know, we get to the Villanovas and the Notre Dames. Those guys have done an unbelievable job of consistently having those solid classes each year.
You've known Mark Few for a long time, and you've played. You were actually one of the few coaches at a high major that was willing to go play them up there and sort of get going on
stupidity.
The home and that kind of thing. Well, but you know what? It was a great sign of respecting where their program is from. So, what does it mean to you to see all this hard work for the Zags to get to this point, to finally cross that threshold and get into the Final Four?
Well, honestly, Andy and Seth, I'm proud of Mark. I've known him for a long time, but I've known him for even longer because of Judd. And, you know, Judd's a big Zag representative up there. He's at the games. And, in fact, Mark Few says they have, instead of Mondays or morning, they have Tuesdays with Judd, you know. So he gets his share of what Judd's like on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. But I think he's done an unbelievable job. And, I think if you look at the difference, and I've heard a lot of people talk, what's the difference between this team and all his others? I look at about three things. They've got a couple better players, meaning high major players. They've got, I think, a lot more toughness, and I think they're 10 times better defensively. That's not insulting that they weren't, but I just think they're a way better defensive team than the ones I've seen in recent years.
You know, as close as you are to that situation, and no, Mark, I'm sure, you know, when you go to the Final Four the first time, you reach out for advice. If you had one bit of advice to give Mark, being this, you know, look, Sweet 16s, Elite 8s are one thing, but this is a different stage.
Yeah,
what would be the one bit of advice you'd give him moving forward this week?
Well, if he would have called me Sunday, I would have told him, get your hotels and your tickets done Sunday night. Because the first time I went, I got mine done about Friday night with the game Saturday. So I really screwed that up, you know. But, you know, I would just try to find a way to enjoy the moment maybe Wednesday and Thursday and then really buckle down on Friday and Saturday. I think you got to – there's still got to be some time when you enjoy the fall to roll and all the work you've done to get there. But, you know, keeping your guys somewhat focused on the task. Well, there's so much noise around, and there is a lot of noise, as we all agree, but there's so much noise around that you got to keep them focused. They got to have fun. They got to be able to do their thing. But at the same time, you know, it's just so much more attention and so much more noise.
Yeah, this game's an interesting game, and obviously you haven't spent a ton of time looking at it, but the one area that Mark is, you know, to me, where there's a question, they don't have that athletic, rangy small forward against You know, when Thornwell, he's big, he's physical. Yeah. When he plays the three, he's a tough matchup. Could you see him, and I've asked other people this question, could you see them playing a little more zone against certain lineups just to, you know, make South Carolina more of a jump shooting team, contain that dribble penetration of Thornwell? And, like, who do you put on Thornwell when, you know, when you're Gonzaga? Yeah. You can't put Jordan Matthews on him. You can't put Nigel Williams-Goss on him. Maybe Perkins, but then they'll probably post him. Can you see them going a little bit out of character playing more zone?
Get on him maybe, but I don't know if he's quick enough outside. I could see him playing a little more zone. You know, they're a little smarter than we are. They play some zone. Judd always reminds me of that every week, in fact. but I think they could play a little more zone. I think what they've got going for them is more bodies, too. They can throw more people at you this year than maybe ever. Their depth is a lot better than it's been. And so maybe you can try bigger guys on them, smaller guys on them, play a little zone. But I think, you know, South Carolina is going to have its work cut out, too, for the size of Gonzaga. And I think the number of people that different kinds of guards, you know, that they can throw at you too. So it's going to be an interesting game, that's for sure.
How about the other game, Oregon against North Carolina? How hard is it to have everything work to where you got the core of your group coming back, you got a chance to play in the national championship game again? Guy declares for the draft, like Justin Jackson, doesn't stay in the draft under this new rule, to have all these sort of things work in your favor. Luke May hits the winning shot. When you step back about how hard it is to get back to the Final Four, what's your opinion of what North Carolina did to get back into this moment?
Well, you know, it happened to us the year we won it. You know, we got there the first year, got beat by Duke. We didn't get to the championship game. But, you know, I think it can work in your favor. I mean, that when Cleaves and Peterson and Hutz and David Thomas and all those guys from back then, that was a battle cry all spring, summer, fall, and the next year, you know. You can say it's pressure, but I think it's pressure that they're putting on themselves, and that's good pressure. And so I think that can work to your advantage. I mean, it's hard. You know, a couple of years ago we got beat in the Final Four. We had a lot of our guys back. We went back, and then we get beat by Middle Tennessee in the first game. You know, I mean, it can work both ways. I think it's two different teams, you know. I do think North Carolina is a little better defensively than they've been in years, but their huge depth inside, is that going to hurt Oregon now that they lost their other big guy? I think that could happen. But, boy, those wing guys played so good when I watched them the other day, and not knowing as much about Oregon as I do, I was really impressed and by the job they do.
Don't you think this will be a really different game than, like, their Kansas game? Because Carolina's going to try to really, like they do, pound that thing inside, get to the offensive glass. Not the strength of Kansas throwing it inside. You think the big challenge for Carolina is to make sure they play whatever defense, you know, Dana runs, whether he extends his defense or goes soft pressure back to some matchup or whatever, making sure they play inside out. Don't you think that's kind of that could be one of the keys?
I do. I mean, I still think other than Jackson and the guard, there's some, you know, question mark on the perimeter shooting at times for Carolina. Their bread and butter is to get it inside. They've got so many bodies that they can get it in there, too. And it's going to be interesting to see if in my mind, if Oregon can stay out of foul trouble in there, because I just don't think they have the depth in there. But Dana does change defenses a lot. I think you're going to see a variety of defenses. Man, matchup, you pick them. The pressure full court or three-quarter court, I think he'll do a lot of different things, and it's going to be interesting game. I mean, it is a unique Final Four in a lot of ways, but I think it's going to be a fun Final Four to watch because it's going to be different styles, different teams. I think it's going to be great for the fans.
Tom, we know you have a decision to discuss with Miles Bridges. It's that time of the year where a player like Miles has to decide whether or not he's going to declare for the NBA draft, although under the new rules he could declare, not sign with an agent, go to the combine, go work out for a team, and then come back. What's the latest on that situation?
Well, you know, that's what I've been doing the last couple of days, you know, and it's been kind of unique because you guys know Miles a little bit. Unbelievable kid. I mean, maybe the best player person I've ever had here. He's just a very humble, I call him a blue collar superstar, and And believe me, what we went through this year, I think it showed his real colors, because as a freshman, you know, not only did he get hurt a little bit there and missed 5 or 6 games, but he had to play with not a lot of veterans around him, all of Kentucky, except if you saw even at the end, Kentucky's sophomore juniors and those two seniors played pretty well for him. So we just didn't have that, and that put more on Miles. But he's a unique kid, and he's really struggling with making a decision, you know. And contrary to popular belief, you know, I'm not sitting here on my hands and knees begging him to stay. I'd be tickled to death if he goes. But he's not one of those guys that's just going to go. He knows where his draft status is. I think most of us know that he's somewhere in that lottery. It's not like he's going to go work out. That the new rules have helped, but I don't know if they've helped the top kids. I think they helped the bottom kids a little bit more. Not many of the top kids go and work out for all these teams and this and that. I think Miles will make a decision in the next couple of weeks before that. But it's been a little harder on him than I thought. You know, when I got him, I thought this kid's one and done, and he's going. He's kind of a pretty good student. He's liked a lot of things. So we're going through a lot of meetings right now to try to educate him, educate ourselves, and see what it does. I think we're going to be a real, real, real good basketball team next year. We got a lot of guys back. Of course, if we get him back, it even changes to another level. So that's a politician's answer, guys, but I can
promise you it's
the truth. I'm telling you the truth. I mean, this thing is somewhat up in the air. To some people, it seems like a no-brainer that he should. Other people, you know, want everybody to come back. Miles is his own man. I know that. No matter what I say, his family says, he's going to take input from everybody, but he's a pretty mature 18, 19-year-old, and I think he'll make a good decision. You know, it won't be a decision that somebody pressures him into, whether it be coaches wouldn't do that, but whether it be me or family or friends or anybody else, he's going to do what he thinks is best.
Hey, Tom, try to explain to people how difficult it is and how careful you have to walk a line because of the culture of our game. Just one, there's no downtime. I mean, you're going from your season to your meetings with your players, to fundraising, to recruiting, to, you know,
summer recruiting, yeah, it doesn't end.
And then dealing with a situation where you're just trying to gather information and give it to a player like Miles and then letting him make a decision, yet the perception is such that everyone has their own agenda. Try to explain that, because I don't think people really understand how exhausting is.
You've hit on something that we could write a book on, as you know, and it's a very good question. I think what bothers me the most, I mean, coaches never, you know, I mean, if a kid stays, it's because, I mean, do you really think that, number one, I could stop a kid from going, or number two, in any sanity, I'd want to? I mean, if a kid goes now, as you know, Seth and Andy, you probably understand, it actually benefits your program almost more than winning the national championship, because everybody wants to be one and done, you know. But so with Miles, I'm just trying to give him the information, but it's a little different. With Deontay last year, he was all over the map as far as where he could be drafted. And Miles is a kid that could be drafted high, and I think everybody agrees with that, you know. As he says to me, sometimes he has goals and dreams on things he wants to accomplish. And it is difficult because you got so many people pulling at everybody. I mean, I've had people call me saying, hey, if he doesn't leave, that's going to hurt you. You know, I've had people call me that, you know, say a million things. And you know what's neat about it, Seth, and that's why I'm still here talking to him, is I'm going to sit down and talk to him about what's best for him. And if it actually hurts my program if he stays or hurts it if he goes, I don't care. This is one time, especially with this kid, if I feel blessed that I got to coach him for a year, and if that's all I get to coach him, I'm going to be his biggest fan moving forward. And I do feel that way. But you are so right. There is so much garbage out there. People have no clue what really goes on between agents, between runners, between friends and people back home, and oh my God, it's It's not as easy as everybody thinks, and I'm sure you know that. Andy, I would think, knows it because he's been around.
Oh, yeah.
But, boy, when you're going through it, it's tough. And I feel like I do have an obligation. You know, there's times I say, Miles, you got to go. And then if he doesn't want to, I got to say, well, God, I got to do this. So there's times I said to a guy, I don't think you should go. And you know what? On a couple of them, I was right. But it is very difficult. It's a responsibility that goes with the job. But I can't say I love it all the time because it is a big responsibility with no real answers. You know, last year we thought a guy would go in the top 10 or 12.
I remember I was there with you in the green room. And he was just sitting there.
You saw what happened. Now, that was a unique situation the other way. But those kind of things, and there's always been someone that's supposed to go 20 that goes 10, and then that gets used for 10 years that, see, this guy did it. So it's difficult. That's why I think it really comes down to the individual person, what he wants to do. And the great part for me is this kid talks about it. We sit down about it. And yet I know he's going to do what he wants to do.
Well, Tom, we appreciate you stopping by, and we will miss you here at the Final Four this year, but I know we'll catch up soon. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't miss many of them, guys, but I appreciate it. I'm glad you two guys are in charge. Make sure, you know, your wives are running the house, but you guys don't be running the streets out there, all right?
You got it, Is.
You don't worry about us.
See you, guys.
All right, Gabe, it's time for Student Section.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, guys. Our first question and only question of the day comes from Anthony in Australia. With UNC reaching another Final Four, can a real case be made?
Wow, Australia.
That the UNC style of recruiting beats one and done.
I think the UNC style of recruiting is a reflection of what they're going through in terms of this uncertainty with the NCAA investigation. I think in a perfect world, UNC would recruit one and dones. They haven't been able to get those commitments. They recruited Bam Adebayo. They've tried to recruit the Aaron Foxes and those players, but they haven't been able to sign them. But in a big picture, having juniors, having seniors, having kids invested, having kids that have learned their system has been a huge advantage because not everyone can coach one and dones, and John Calipari's figured out a way to do it, but maybe Roy Williams, he can coach one and dones, but he's also done a great job with his veteran team.
Yeah, they've been very fortunate, obviously, to have all these guys come back, and as we know, they've had one and dones in the past, and I'm sure they will have them again in the future. All right, that'll wrap up our Final Four preview in advance of the national semifinal games on Saturday. We'll be back on Monday to preview the national championship game here on Courtside. As always, you can go to the ESPN app and click on the headphone icon to get our podcast or wherever you can find your podcast. Subscribe and download it. Like us as much as you can. You can follow Seth on Twitter at Seth on Hoops, and you can follow me on Twitter at ESPN Andy Katz. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Katz and Coach G. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts. Courtside with Katz and Coach G.